You're tuned into Desperate, a podcast where two unwed women take a walk down Wisteria Lane to visit ABC's critically acclaimed show, Desperate Housewives. Retire your apron, kick off your heels, and sit back. Hit it, girls!
Hey, Desperate Housewives fans, and welcome to Desperate. I'm Julia.
And I'm Jordan.
And we're joined by our lovely cats, Salem and Gigi.
Yes.
And we are two unwed women and cat moms taking a walk down Wisteria Lane to visit ABC's critically acclaimed show, Desperate Housewives. We are seeing what lessons we can learn from the lovely ladies on the lane. And we are just getting ready to bury a body any day now. We could probably do it successfully.
Oh, yeah.
Probably commit some fraud. Blackmail some people. We're learning quite a lot. And this is a podcast where we go through what happened last week on last week's episode. We go episode by episode, recap that. Then we go into recap of today's episode. And we give you some desperate deeds before that of our own to get you warmed up. And then at the end, we evaluate everything on several different scales. On the fuckability of the characters. We do a fuck, marry, kill. Lately, there haven't been very many fuckable people, though.
No, we've struggled with that one the most.
Yes. And we do a housewife or husband of the week, which last week we had a husband.
Yeah.
And it was epic.
For the first time in a long time.
Long time. I think one time we gave it to Tom.
Yeah.
And then we also do a five apple rating on a scale of 1 to 5 apples.
Yeah.
How we rate the episode, which we've been reevaluating our scale because we were going far too high for this, the quality of these episodes of season two.
We're trying to get better, being more judgy, I guess, of the episodes.
So if you've been along from the ride from the beginning, thank you very much. If you're just tuning in now, we're going to catch you up. But we're so happy that we have some other Desperate Housewives super fans. And I think I could call myself a super fan now.
Oh, yeah, definitely. We have a podcast about it.
It brings me peace to, watch the familiar territory.
It does have a vibe that I really like.
Yeah, it's, the perfect tone sometimes that I need because I watch a lot of different television lately. I know that I'm really late. I started watching True Detective. Whole different vibe.
Oh, I got from the first season?
Yeah, I'm going to skip season two. Everybody told me to. I was trying to watch Yellow Jackets on Showtime, which I've heard amazing things about. My service got interrupted because I was stealing somebody's Showtime, and they found out. So I haven't finished Yellow Jackets. I've been watching Only Murders in the Building, which I recommended to Jordan. It was one of my favorite shows.
Yeah.
And
I really want to watch it. It's on my list now.
Oh my God. I'm rewatching it over and over. And because there's only 10 episodes. So I just put it on. And then I've also been watching And Just Like That, a Sex and the City reboot, they want to call it. It's a completely different show, but.
Completely different vibe, but kind of makes sense, I guess. It is 20 years later. So it's of course it's going to change.
Jordan, I made Jordan watch it, and she had the exact opinions I thought she would have about it.
Yeah.
And I loved it. But when you're watching all that, it's just so much going on. Desperate Housewives is the constant. It's the control group. I always know I can come back and be safe with these ladies.
Yeah, for sure.
So, yes, we could talk about what happened last episode. It was episode 15. It was a Valentine's Day episode. Today, we're going to be doing episode 16. So, we're wondering where they went after kind of low-key Valentine's Day. Because the only storyline that addressed it was Susan and Carl.
Yeah.
And nobody else addressed Valentine's Day this year.
Yeah, there were not Valentine's vibes for the other stories whatsoever.
Not as epic as season one Valentine's episode.
No, there was no stab wounds.
And this also coincided with an actual Valentine's Day 2022. So we hope you all enjoyed that.
Yeah, that was a fun coincidence. But now I do wish that the episode had been more on theme.
Yeah, if anybody went to Shay Naomi, let us know. I'm still obsessed with his restaurant. But yeah, Susan and Carl are getting fake married, if we recall, because Susan's spleen is wandering around her body, she could die from it. She's dating Dr. Ron, which they only ever call Dr. Ron.
Yeah, in case we forget that.
Yeah, in case we forget who Ron is, and in case we forget she's dating a doctor, which is far out of her league, I'd have to say.
I agree.
And they're dating, and Carl's dating Edie, and Susan and Carl have hatched the plan to get married so that Susan can have insurance. And then this episode, they both go to eat at Shea Naomi, which is such a coincidence. And Edie believes that Carl is going to pop the question because she finds the ring and, like, the legal documents for the insurance fraud marriage that Carl and Susan are about to commit. She sees Susan at the restaurant and decides it's time for her to tell her that she's going to marry Carl, even though she doesn't know. And she's like, sorry to ruin your Valentine's Day. And Susan starts freaking out and is like, yeah, he's not going to propose. Maybe you shouldn't get your hopes up. Like, she really takes it upon herself to not ruin, quote unquote, ruin Edie's dream of getting married to Carl. And I don't know whether she really does. I kept saying last episode, nothing happened and nothing did happen. Like, Carl doesn't propose. Edie's a little disappointed. They go home and I'm sure they called it a night.
Yeah, and, like, then Carl and Susan get married. Like, everything that you think is going to happen happens. There's no twist. There's no...
Yeah, and Susan and Carl have a conversation, and Susan is being like, I was on board with getting married when nobody was getting hurt. And I'm like, nobody did get hurt. Like, I guess Edie's a little bit upset that she didn't get proposed to, but how can you be hurt?
Like, Edie's only upset because she found a ring and thought she was getting proposed to, because Susan and Carl, for no reason whatsoever, decided to hide it from Edie.
Yeah.
Like, that's the thing. Like, Susan's like, we're trying not to hurt people. I'm like, no, you're not. Like, no, you're not. You're making it way more complicated. And, like, you're causing a pain that doesn't need to be there.
A way dramatic monologue that was totally unnecessary. And then they, at the end of it, Carl, they agree to get married anyway. And Carl's like, what, are you jealous? Do you still have feelings for me? Because he is like, actually, I probably will marry Edie, like, after we get divorced.
Yeah.
And that, like, pisses Susan off. So then at the end, they just decide to get married. Like, nothing happened. But that was our Valentine's Day content.
Yeah, no, that was, like, the only part of it that was Valentine's Day.
Yeah, it was, like, minor Valentine's Day. It was, like, yeah, disappointing. Hope you had a better Valentine's Day than that.
Yeah. Well, apparently Lynette and Tom just, like, completely ignored having any holiday whatsoever. So.
Yeah, Lynette and Tom were more concerned about their kids being dropped off at a fucking salon. Not even dropped off.
They ran and just happened to find, like, where? I need to know about Fairview. Because Fairview feels a lot like they live in, like, the suburbs of L.A., like, if you ask me.
It is. I mean, we know it was filmed there, but they were like, Fairview, it's really just, like, Calabasas. Like,
yeah.
I don't know. So their kids walked 3 and some miles to, like, the salon, and I don't know how they ended up at a salon, or if the salon owners were like, hey, why are these kids in attendant coming here? But they seem to be walking to their parents' work, which, do they even know where their parents work? I don't know. Tom and Lynette get called into work. Mrs. McCluskey is going to babysit, and then Lynette has some issue that she's ancient, which, like, who cares if she's going to watch your fucking kids for probably free?
Also, old people, like, are going to pay attention, you know what I mean? Like, teenagers, I feel like, are way less reliable than
absolutely
an old person.
Absolutely not. If I have a kid, I'm never hiring a, like, 16-year-old. I know what I was like when I was 16. I was not responsible. So, Mrs. McCluskey, we think, would have been... She was runner-up for Housewife of the Week.
Yeah.
She had some good things going for her, but... Basically, Lynette's like, shoo, like, we don't need you as a babysitter. And Mrs. McCluskey's like, I heard you call me ancient, like, rude.
Yeah. And then she really does say, like, shoo, though. She's like, riff-raff, get out of here, bag of bones.
Yeah, you bag of bones.
Oh, my God.
Are you dead yet?
Like, yeah, like, what the fuck?
Lynette, it came out of nowhere. I'm like, I thought you guys were cool. Like, I don't care. So she's like, get out of here. And then she calls on Bree because I guess Bree spanked her kids and they had a whole issue about it. I don't know why she's ever letting Bree babysit again. Like,
oh yeah, hell no.
Whatever. So Bree fucks it up again because Bree has a huge drinking problem, which we realize this at the beginning of the episode. She passes out on her front lawn after a night at this restaurant where they sing opera. She downs 2 bottles of wine to herself, which epic, but she also passes out on her front lawn. Mm-hmm. And Mrs. McCluskey sees this, but Lynette doesn't know any of this happened because apparently she doesn't have eyes. And she calls upon Lynette to babysit anyway. And or she calls upon Bree mm-hmm. to babysit anyway. Bree starts drinking wine because she's hungover. Number one, she's hungover. Second of all, she has an addiction. And third of all, the kids were being annoying as fuck. And she felt like mm-hmm. she needed a drink. So
yeah,
that was that. Then when she falls asleep, the kids walk the 4+ miles to the salon. Mm-hmm. And the salon owners call Lynette, which how did they get her number? Good that the kids knew their phone number.
To be fair, in that year, like 2005, I do feel like parents kind of at least tried to make their kids learn their parents' phone numbers. So yeah. I feel like I knew my parents' phone number.
I remember my house phone number and I think a cell phone number.
Yeah.
So that happened. And then Lynette and Tom go to pick the kids up. And Lynette is like popping off at this black salon owner. And Tom shuts her up because he was like, why are you being so fucking rude when this lady found our kids?
Yeah. He's like, what is wrong with you?
And we think it was like racially spurred.
Uh-huh.
I do.
I do too.
So yeah.
We had a whole talk about it. I'm sorry. I have to touch on it again. Desperate Housewives does not know how to handle people of color. And it is like shocking, like that they picked like this scene. I don't know, like to hire like a black woman as an extra.
Yeah, I felt like it was weird and they directed the writers in a weird way. They were like, yeah, make Lynette pop off at her.
Yeah.
And it's like, what?
I know. And then we're not going to acknowledge the race part of it at all.
Yeah, we're acknowledging the race part. But then Lynette goes home and her kids are like telling her the truth for once. They were like, no, this bitch fell asleep and we wanted to come see you. Mm-hmm. And she's like, Bree, like what the fuck happened? And Bree is like, they must have snuck out while I was cooking or something. And she doesn't believe her kids. She grounds her kids. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, wow, that was rash. And then Mrs. McCluskey's like, yeah, Bree has a drinking problem. Don't you know? And I saw her, I smelled wine on her breath while she was looking for your kids. Like, what do you look for in a babysitter? Because it's rude that you think I'm dead and I could babysit. So then Lynette goes to confront Bree, and Bree gets the most defensive she's ever been. She's like, I don't have a drinking problem. The only problem I have is with your motherfucking kids. So
she escalates that real bad. Like,
yeah. No. And then Lynette snaps back and she looks through Bree's trash, which is where the altercation happens.
Mm-hmm.
And we hear all the bottles, but then Lynette investigates and there's like bottle on bottle. And I'm like, that's a lot of money on wine. Hopefully it's good wine.
Yeah.
And then she lines them up in front of Bree's house and she says, she leaves a note that says, still think you don't have a problem. And mic drop. So that's their story.
Mm-hmm. And then I can go over Gabby's if you'd like.
Yeah, because Gabby's story was pretty epic too.
Yeah, we had a lot of feelings about Gabby's story. And it was, it honestly, like Susan's storylines have looked bad because of stories like this. Like Gabby's was just like so fully fleshed and really helped to see a new side of her. So Gabby's mom comes in to visit and she, right from the get with her introduction, we understand that she is very like flirtatious. It puts herself out there because she's like very attention hungry. It's strange. And she's a gold digger because Gabby makes a comment about her boyfriend, which apparently she's broken up with. And, you know, now she has to find, you know, a new man's and all that crap. So she, you know, basically she butts into their like baby problems because they're trying to have a kid. And Carlos and Gabby go to the doctor and the doctor tells them that Gabby basically has some injuries from her miscarriage. So it's going to be really hard for them to have another child. And so her mom basically volunteers to be a surrogate, and Carlos is into it because he has a problem with adoption, apparently, and wants, like, this child to be of their blood, and Gabby's weary.
He's like, DNA matters.
Yeah.
Needs to have my DNA.
And I'm like, so far we've got a statutory rapist and a slave labor dude trying to make a baby? Yeah, sounds like some great DNA, but okay.
He's like, my wife is a model.
Yeah. So Gabby, like, pretends to be into it and takes her mom shopping when in reality she just dumps her at a hotel. And
her mom is acting crazy already. She's
Her mom's just very manipulative. Like,
got
super,
a boob
super
job, going through a midlife crisis, like, getting broken up with.
Yeah, like, she's a fucking mess. Like, but it's just, it's sad because you see where some of Gabby's qualities come from, in that she had to survive around a woman like that. Yeah. And so Gabby, like, is home, and Carlos gets mad at her, and he's like, what's going on? And, you know, Gabby breaks down about the sexual assault she experienced, and now we know it is rape, based on what her mom said. Yeah,
from her mom's stepfather. Her mom's husband is who sexually assaulted her.
Yeah, so she was assaulted by her stepfather, and Gabby opens up more about it to Carlos. So Carlos was actually surprisingly tender and understanding, like, because Gabby says, like, I never talked to her about it, but I was scared she'd never believe me, and, you know, wouldn't take my side. And Carlos is like any person is like kind of surprised by that, because he's like, well, it's your mom. Like, of course she would like care, because like, yes, a normal parent would believe their child. But he decides to go and like talk to Gabby's mom, and he rolls up to the hotel, and Gabby's mom is naked, getting out of the shower. And she very seductively gets ready for her evening as she's talking to Carlos and is like creepy flirty with him, which I wish Carlos, like, I don't even think he needed to ask about the assault situation. Her mom is clearly, like, a weirdo and is, like,
her mom
manipulative and, like, flirting with him, like, and he just doesn't care.
Her
like,
mom he doesn't keeps see the, touching his arm.
Yeah, and, like, just being, like, not fully dressed around him and, like, so I don't know. Weird,
yeah.
I just feel like if I were Carlos, like, obviously that's, like, a red flag behavior, but okay. So he brings up to her the assault, and in the most disturbing scene we've seen in a while, her mother basically is like, yeah, they had sex. Gabby always wanted everything I had. She always wore my shoes and my jewelry, and like normal children do, dress up.
She was just a kid, yeah.
Yeah, playing dress up, yeah. But okay. And she's like, she seduced him away from me, and she gets what she wants. And Carlos.
Gabby and Carlo.
Her Italian husband. Yeah. So Carlos, luckily, like, we were very proud of him. He is disgusted by what he sees. He doesn't really say anything to her, but he comes home. He gives Gabby a huge hug, tells her, you know, he just dropped off the luggage and left, and tells her that adopting is fine.
Yeah.
And it is truly, like, a really touching moment. We gave him house husband of the week, because that was, he showed up for his lady. He did try to mediate between her and her mom, which I do respect that, even though there were some selfish reasons why he wanted to, but at the end of the day, like, he was there for her, and I think that their bond, while it has been problematic in the past, I do think that they are growing together, and it's really nice, and it was a good character episode for them.
So the message is, you can lie to your significant other if it makes them feel better.
Yeah.
If it's important like this. So
yeah.
No, it was a great story. So we loved it. We are here for it.
Yeah.
That's where we left off. I don't think, we did get a little bit of Mike and Paul and Zach Young.
Yes.
Paul was just like, stop asking about your dad, Zach, because Zach keeps being like, who's my dad? Do I look like him? Mm-hmm. And Paul is like, literally stop. Like, I hate you.
Yeah. He's like, stop wondering, you freak.
And then, and then Noah, Taylor, and Sullivan, the dirty cop, make a plan to kill Paul, essentially.
Mm-hmm.
He's like, give him a toy chest of his own. And we get into like that mob boss type of story that Desperate Housewives does once in a while.
Mm-hmm.
And then, Mike catches wind of this somehow. And he's like, you all need to be careful. Like, Noah Taylor wants to meet Zach. Oh, yeah, because then at the same time, Noah Taylor tells Mike that he wants to meet Zach, and he has 2 days to produce him. And Mike then tells Paul that they can agree that they both don't want Zach to meet his grandpa because Noah Taylor is evil. And that's the one thing they agree on.
Yeah.
So that is where we leave off. Like, Mike warns him about Noah Taylor, and Paul is like, yeah, okay, thanks. And then Zach overhears that, like, Mike is his dad, because they, like, touch upon it.
Mm-hmm.
Because he's like, leave town. And Paul's like, if we leave town, you understand that we're, like, never coming back, and you'll never get to know Zach. And he's like, sacrifice I have to make. And, and Zach is like, OMG. Behind the door. So that's what happened with them. There was no Applewhite action, so we are left clueless about the
They're just so inconsistent with the Applewhites. They're like, we'll have them one episode and have great progress, great integration, and they're like, bye. Like, yeah, you're not going to see them for a while.
The Matt-Danielle situation, the Caleb situation, we have a lot of emptiness there right now, but
yeah,
that's what was going on. So we can just ride along into our Desperate Deeds.
Mm-hmm.
I can go first this week. Right. It's not my own Desperate Deed, but it is very desperate. So my friend told me about, like, she's been dating her boyfriend for quite a while now. They might, you know, get engaged. I don't know. They've been talking about that. But she's been living with him for maybe 2 years out of the four. And she was talking about how when, like, there's just some barriers you have to cross with your significant other. And she's like, things really change when you just walk in on your boyfriend shitting. Or like, you know, she's like, one time I walked in on him masturbating and things really changed. They didn't change. No. She's like, I was like, what did you do after that? She's like, I mean, I went back in the room for a little bit and just pretended like I didn't see it. And then we just never addressed it. Like, we've never spoken about it.
Oh, no. I don't know if I could never talk about it. I don't know. I don't know what I would do. Oh, man.
That's not even, that was funny, but it's not even the desperate deed.
Okay, sorry.
The desperate deed is that she was talking about how she, like, got a parasite when she went to Mexico one time and, like, her digestive system was fucked up. And they had, like, just moved in together. And they shared an apartment with, like, it was a one bed, one bath. And so she had gone to the bathroom and, like, flushed, but she had to, like, run to a meeting. And it was, like, when we were working from home, I think. Mm-hmm. So she, like, got on her computer right away. And she didn't, like, check if it flushed or not. And I guess, like, it clogged the toilet. And her boyfriend woke up. And he was like, whoa. He, like, ran out of the bathroom. Was, like, heavy hitter in the toilet. And then she was on her meeting, so she, like, couldn't go address the situation for, like, 30 minutes. And he was trying to, like, unplug the toilet and use the plunger, but it, like, wouldn't work. And so their plunger, like, broke trying to fix her mistake.
I have no words.
And then she made him go to Target and get another plunger, and that one broke as well.
I can't. This isn't real. Oh, no. Oh, no.
And then he had to
I'm having so much secondhand, like.
And then he had to go to work. And she had to call the maintenance guy. And the maintenance guy got there and she's like, yeah, my boyfriend, like, fucked up the toilet this morning.
Low-key, I would do that, too. I would throw him under the bus.
I just have to say the desperation. I don't think I've been there in this situation with, like, a toilet problem. But, like, when you have to, like, something, you're trying to fix the problem and, like, whatever you're using breaks and you have to go to the store to get another one. Like, that's a certain kind of desperate. You're like, yeah. Fuck, I have to get another one right now.
Oh, so, my God.
I love that they are still together after this.
Yeah, they can never break up. He knows too much. Like, they know too much about each other.
It's a funny story. And I love that. The desperation. I would lie to the maintenance guy, too. I wouldn't be like, that was me. Oh, I have a parasite. Hell yeah. I'd be like, my boyfriend, like, ate too much last night.
Oh, my God. Or I'd just say he has a parasite.
But it was the best story that I heard all week.
That's brutal. I'm like, I feel so much pain for both of them. Like, yeah, oh, my God.
I'm glad that last week's death, I mean, yeah, that was desperate. So what's
mine's
yours?
Not nearly as good as or funny as that one. mine was just another wardrobe issue I had. So when I first moved down here, my friend and I were going to this showing of Shaun of the Dead that was, like, hosted by Edgar Wright.
Okay.
And it was at the Greek Theater, and she was picking me up from work. And this is when I used to work at a hotel, and I had to wear, like, a polo with, like, the hotel logo and, like, a sweater with the hotel logo.
Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah, so we were, like, going to the event, and I went to my car to grab all my stuff, and I realized I had forgotten a change of clothes. And I lived, like, 40 minutes from the hotel, so that was not going to happen. So basically, all the pictures from that night, I had a pair of, like, fun jeans and boots in the car, so I put those on, but I literally was rocking, like, a Mission Inn polo with a big logo on it and sweater at this event the whole night, and it was super shitty and uncomfortable.
I feel
and
I just had to rock
it. Yeah, I just had to rock it, and I'm like, wow, this is like so sad. Like, this is so depressing. I'm at this event where one of my favorite like directors, and I'm stuck in a goddamn hotel polo looking like a fucking idiot. And it was like my first like event thing that I like in LA, like when I moved out here, and I was like, wow, this is such a bummer. Like,
you're like, and I'm wearing, oh my God, the amount of, yes, I used to do that in high school all the time when I'd come from my restaurant jobs with like my black pants, and I'm like, fuck, I want to go to this like hangout and let me see if I have a shirt in my car, and I'd be wearing like gross like restaurant pants and like ugly ugly shoes, the ugliest shoes, and I was just like, yeah, just like whatever I fucking have. I'm like, ew, I looked horrible all the time, but sometimes you just gotta do it. If you're desperate to go to the thing, like, you just bear with it.
I know. I wasn't about to, like... Oh, and on the way to that, I got dumped by the guy I was seeing. So that was, like, a double
whammy. What the fuck was that? Okay, I think I know when this was.
You know who, like, it was. Yeah. It was, like, just a few months after. On the
way over text. Yeah.
Yeah. And that was, like... That was, I used this as a desperate deed a while ago because he sent me this. Yes, yeah. All that was happening at once. Yes.
Oh my God. I didn't know that was on the way to the event or like on the way somewhere.
And I was like in the car with my friend and her friend who I didn't know. So I was like trying to hold my shit together. And then I'm realizing I have a wardrobe issue. I'm about to get dumped. And I am like having to play this shit cool on the way to this event. I wasn't going to let it ruin the event. Like, that was not going to happen. So I was like, fuck
That's good of you. I would have had a mental breakdown on the spot.
I was pretty close. When I realized I didn't have my clothes, I was like, wow, this is just, I'm taking an L today. But it ended up being a great time. So.
Yeah. Oh, well, I have two desperate deeds now that you're reminding me. Next, so I'll be locked and loaded for the next couple episodes, you guys. This is how we keep you coming back. Like,
we remind each other of our most, like, degrading moments.
The most when we tell horrible things that have happened to us.
The things we wish we could forget.
Like, yeah, fuck. But we're super excited to watch this episode and see what these ladies, what trouble they get into. It's escalating. But we're watching season 2, episode 16, There Is No Other Way. And you can watch that on Hulu or Amazon Prime if you're watching along with us. We're going to go ahead and watch the episode, and then we'll meet you right back here. So don't go anywhere. But before that, we like you to watch safely. So buckle up.
Buckle up. Breathe faces legal action from a surprising source. Susan finally goes under the knife. Tom struggles being Lynette's subordinate. Gabby and Carlos run into an unexpected roadblock in their adoption process. And Zach finally meets his grandfather.
There's a lot of problematic behavior in this episode.
Oh, yeah.
Around drinking. If you're sensitive to alcoholism, this is not your episode. And
I mean, yeah, just in general. This
is not your season. Yeah, Bree's storyline. It's getting out of control.
Yeah.
Oh, my Lord. But we finally know what Paul Young does, you guys. And they gave him some meat. They gave him, Mike, and Zach a lot of meat this episode. We have a whole storyline. Like, normally it's like 5 minutes. Yeah, they were like,
in case you forgot about us.
Yeah.
Like, here we are. It's back in.
Yeah. It's just as long as everybody else's. So get ready. But yeah, lots of problems going on. We have a slave laborer and a statutory rapist trying to adopt a child. Which it's easy to forget when you see redeeming moments between them. That's truly who they are. Now they're trying to adopt a child. So
I have to say, while I do love Gabby and Carlos and their character growth, I didn't disagree with Helen's, like,
not at sabotage. All. I, like, when she put it in perspective, I was like, I fucking forgot.
They probably shouldn't be allowed to just, like, adopt just children.
Yes, but not at all. And I love the length they went to as well. We'll get into it. But yeah, we've got some alcoholism. We have some masculinity issues. We just have some problems going on. But we start out with Paul Young, and Jordan and I were saying that we love this cold open because we just, we've been wondering what he did. We wondered why they were just loaded.
And this is weird because I feel like this is the first time we've really gotten an insight into Paul.
Yeah.
We don't know much about like Paul as a person.
Not at all. We know that he's very cold. Mm-hmm. We know that he just has no heart, really. We know that he looks good in a sweater.
Yeah.
But I said I should have known he worked in finance. He has been wearing, he's been rocking the finance uniform. If you know any dudes in finance, you will notice that they have an affection for polos and button-ups. And like mm-hmm. other like just kind of nerdy outfits. Yeah. And I noticed that Paul dresses that way all the motherfucking time. So yeah. Mary Alice Young starts talking about her husband, and I liked it. It was like she's looking beyond the grave back at her husband. And I was like, mm-hmm. aw. But what made my husband such a good investor was his uncanny ability to anticipate the future. He foresaw the necessity of the Velcro shoe. He predicted the advent of the $3 cup of coffee. And I'm like, wow, I wish that coffee was just $3 these days. Yeah. Inflation, baby. And he anticipated the boom of bottled water, which I didn't know there was a bottled water boom. I thought that was just always a thing. Like, lots of people.
Yeah.
I don't know when the bottle. Let me know when the bottled water boom was. But
I know. I need the economic history.
Yeah.
Then, ASAP.
Yeah, I do. And then we see like a little cameo of him talking about the election in Brazil and like investing in sugar. And I'm like, oh my gosh, he's like a stock daddy. Like he plays the stock.
I'm like
market.
Investing in sugar though. Like they went from bottled water to like sugar and like international like relation. I was like, whoa, okay, so he's like
what is he fucking
on the international
do?
Market, I guess. Yeah. Like what's happening?
And then someone knocks at the door and Mary Alice Young says, but the crystal ball that served him so well in the stock market somehow failed him closer to home. And it's Dirty Cop Sullivan at the door. Mm-hmm. I am not enjoying his haircut or his hairstylist or whatever's happening with his hair. It just doesn't do good anything good for him. But he says, you need to come downtown for questioning. And, of course, Paul is like, why? Because he questions everything. He says, we're investigating reports of credit card fraud, and your name has been linked with several victims. And we were also discussing this earlier before we started recording, but, like, how easy is it to change your name and get away with a new lifestyle these days?
Because I feel like these stories would be harder to, like, they're not as plausible now.
Yeah. I mean, there's no way that they... I guess in the 90s, maybe you have an easier time, but I don't know. And was Polly... Were they always the Young? No, they were called something else before.
No, it was like Angela was her original
Angela,
name.
But was their last name always Young?
I don't think it was Young. I think it
Forrester?
Was like Angela.
Is that what it was?
I don't know. Wait,
wow,
let me
we're
it.
The worst. We could not. We could not run a Desperate Housewives trivia night.
Like, I know.
Even though we recap in depth, I don't know. But yes, either way, they're investigating in credit card fraud. Jordan will come back with the answer in a moment. And Paul is like, that must be a mistake. And he's like, it could be, but we still need to go downtown to straighten things out. And Zach is like, how long will this take, Dad? And Paul's like, don't fucking worry. And Felicia is getting out of a cab nearby and sees Paul being taken away, and they exchange a look. So that happens.
It's Angela Forrest.
Yeah.
So you're really close. Damn, I didn't even... If I was like, Forrest, I don't even know if I've heard that name. So you picked up on something.
This memory holds unnecessary things all the time. Then at the police station, Paul is turning his stuff in and like being booked. And he's like, wait, why am I being booked? And this cop is like... The other cop booking him is like, you can't book him here. The computers are down and you'll have to go to... And like, we're full. You have to go to county. And they slap some handcuffs on him. And I'm like, this is escalating very fast. And they put him in the back of a truck with other convicts in like orange jumpsuits. And he's still wearing his little finance uniform.
I know. So, his little like button up.
Yeah, he's looking very professional. And Mary Alice Young says, yes, in the world of investments, Paul could see the future. But sadly, Paul didn't see this coming at all. And once he's in the back of the truck, the inmates are like, we have a message from Deidre's father. He sends his regards. And Paul's like, oh, fuck. And they come at him with a knife. And we're like, dun, dun, dun. Is Paul dead?
And, like, the whole thing's rocking. Like, they're beating, they're throwing him around in there.
They are thrashing.
Like, it's like a WWE in there. I was like, Jesus.
SmackDown, Joe Rogan is commentating. It's UFC. Yeah.
Can you imagine? Holy
it's
shit.
Wild in there. So we don't know what happened with Paul. Mm-mm. But we cut to the intro. We get some credits. And then we open up on Brie. And this is also another one of my favorite openings because I think it shows how something can escalate so innocuously.
Yeah.
So Brie had a weekly routine she's been following for years. And I'm like, maybe I need a weekly routine as well. She cleaned on Tuesdays. She paid bills on Wednesdays and did laundry on Thursdays. And I'm like, this bitch is getting stuff done. Mm-hmm. If I have never done laundry on the same day every week. Like,
I'm like starting to get better at it. Like, I'm starting to make sure.
I need to have more of a routine. I'm just like, I guess my laundry is full. I should do something about this. And like, it happened just so sporadically. But that's her routine. And after these chores were completed, she would reward herself with a little drink. And I'm like, dang, sister. So 3 days a week, you've just been hitting the bottle like midday. Like, yeah, that is already questionable. Like,
yeah.
If I was rolling over to your house at like 11 and you're like, just did my chores and here's my reward, and you were like drinking wine, I'd be like, okay. Interesting.
I mean, like, hey, Saturday morning, glass of wine in the afternoon, sure.
Yeah.
But like every day or making that your routine.
Absolutely.
Like, that's
on a Saturday, you can start a little bit earlier. But
yeah.
Not like, I'm imagining she's done by 11 because I think this girl gets up at 6 o'clock in the morning every day.
I don't know. Not with the way she's hitting that bottle.
Yeah, not lately. So it was noticed by her friends and it had now become a part of their routine to discuss it. And mm-hmm. Lynette, Gabby, and Susan are having a little powwow by Lynette's car before she goes to work. And they're talking about how Brie had passed out, like had too many and passed out babysitting. And Lynette is giving the recap.
I had to laugh at this because, like, she stopped her car just, like, in the street.
And is, like, standing. They're all standing.
Was, like, right outside Brie's house, too. I'm like, all right, like,
okay. sister. Yeah. And so Susan wonders if, Lynette's seen Brie since. And she's like, no, I haven't. I'm worried about her. But, like, I can't get over what she did. Don't know when I'll do that. And then she's like, skirt, gotta go to work. So after Lynette leaves, Brie comes out to Gabby and Susan looking stiff, I have to say. I just, like, whenever I see Marcia Cross, like, walking, she always just looks, like, stiff to me. Like, maybe that's a character thing.
I think it's a character choice, I want to say.
Yeah, I'm not really sure. It's just every time I'm like, wow. And she's kind of hunched. Mm-hmm. This is just, sorry, I've been watching too much of this. But
no such thing.
Yes, and... like, Lynette leaves and Brie comes over, like I said, and she's like, saw y'all talking. What are you talking about? Let me know. I'm like, dang, just right to it. And Gabby's like, adoptions. And Susan says, surgery. And she's like, did she mention the tiff we had? And the girls are like, oh, barely, just in passing. And she's like, here's what happened on my side. The antihistamine story happens again, and she's like, wine with dinner, who doesn't? But to trash my entire reputation and say I have a drinking problem, and they're like, she didn't trash you, like, don't worry. And she's like, don't want...
I know, the way Gabby said it, I was like, her acting has improved.
Yeah, her acting, she's like so good now.
Yeah, I was like, okay.
And she's like, don't want you to have the wrong impression. And she's like, I'm going to get a bath mat at the mall today. They're having a white sale. And I'm like, that is so boring. I hate this for you. And she says, anyone need one? And I'm, okay, yeah, I can't even get into, like, if someone were to offer to buy me a bath mat, I'd find it strange. But
yeah,
they're all like, no. And she walks away, and the ladies are like, did you smell the alcohol in her breath? And they agree that they did. So.
Quick pause before we continue. Susan was wearing what looked like an old Western, like... weird designed shirt, and Gabby was wearing yet again a velour tracksuit to work out, and her hair, she like was clearly working out and her hair was like just down, like styled, like I was like, what is happening?
Nobody,
like,
in their life has ever done that.
No, and nobody wears that shirt. It was like an orange pinstripe shirt with embroidery in like a Western style. I could not believe that anybody would ever wear that, let alone on a TV show.
She was wearing, like, True Religion jeans, too. Like, something egregious.
I was so disturbed. I was like, why?
So, yeah, nobody was killing it that morning. Like, no. Lynette, yeah.
Disaster.
It's just all awful. So, poor girl. But it gets worse for Brie. I'll just go through hers, and then we can get to everyone else. Because Brie's story is a lot. And yeah. It has to do with Andrew once again. And he is fucking wilder than ever. And I still am here for it. I don't know that I support this. This was a lot. And it is really desperate because it's all for money and a car, which I feel like Andrew would grow up in 5 years and be like, this wasn't worth it. like the lengths that he goes to. But
yeah, this is like he enters like berserker mode with how he tries to manipulate the situation.
Yeah, the gist of it is that Andrew wants a car because like somebody can't drive him to school anymore, and Bree, that's like what starts it all. And then he's like, you can give me my trust fund and I could buy a car. And Bree is like, fuck no, I can't even believe she's that like, you suggest that. You're not an adult. And he's like, I'm 17. I'm going to be gone in a year. Like, what's the big deal? So then he hires his pretty boyfriend, Justin, to punch him in the face with a Super Bowl type looking ring. Mm-hmm. And he punches him in the face.
It's like a class ring.
Yeah, it's a class ring of some sort. And like, he punches him in the face more than once because Andrew's like, do you love me? And if you do, you're going to fucking punch me again. And he comes home all bruised and battered and says that his mom fucking hit him, which she did, which I'll go into later. And basically he's trying to sue Bree for his trust fund money, which he has a trust fund. That's like the top line of like the main points. But it all starts like Bree's enjoying some wine in the backyard and she's like trying to hide it. And Andrew's like, you don't have to hide it. And that's where he brings up his ride to school. And she suggests that he gets a job so that he can get a car because he immediately is like, you could get me a car. And he's like, well, I do have money. And that's where we find out about the trust fund, which I'm like, how much money did Rex fucking make?
This is where, why, like, I liked hearing about Paul making money, because now they've set up that he could potentially make unlimited amounts of money, right?
Yeah.
Whereas with Rex, like, he's a surgeon and I get that, but
Maybe it was like family money. They both seem like old money type of people. So maybe it's Vandekamp. Yeah. Like, come on. So something like, he has a trust fund. And Bree's like, I would wait until you're 50 to even give it to you if I could. You know that you're going to waste it. And he is like mouthing off. And he's like, why are you being like this? And she's like, I have to teach you about things. And he's like, what do you know about like delayed gratification? It's not even noon on your third glass of wine. And so he pops off like that. And she says, I want me driving you to school. You can walk. And he says, I want my money. And she's like, the answer is no. And he's like, aren't you a mean old drunk? And then she slaps him. And that's where the physical abuse claims begin. And the next thing we do, Andrew's out here giving Justin a ring. And I was like, this is romantic, isn't it? Post Valentine's Day. I didn't know what was going on. I was very confused. And then he's like, All right, let's do this. And Justin gets up and punches him in the face. And he does it. And then he's like, one more time. And he's like, I don't want to mess up your face. You're my boyfriend. And he's like, do you love me? Do what I tell you. And I said, OMG, Andrew, you're crazy.
He's a little manipulator. He's psychotic. If I were Justin, I'd be like, okay, this is getting a little weird.
Out of hand.
Yeah.
So then next thing we know, Bree comes downstairs to meet Samuel Bormanis, who's there to see Andrew. And she says, are you a friend of his? And I'm like, what would make you think that this man is 50 years old? He is literally 50 years old. And Bree's like, are you a friend of Andrew's? And it's like, okay, lady. She says, I'm his lawyer. What does he need a lawyer for? Andrew comes down and she's like, what happened to your face? And she's like, you hit me. Don't you remember? And then they move to the table. They're talking about it. And he's like, the problem is when you drink, you don't know your own strength and like you don't remember things. And she's like, what the fuck? This is ridiculous. And he wants to be emancipated and he would have control of his own money. And Bree's like, oh, so this is what it's about. And they give her 24 hours, which I think is not legally right. We were to check that, but they're threatening to go to family court with the violence and the DUI. So she does have a lot working against her right now. And she says she needs time to think about it.
Yeah.
Then we see her getting rid of all of her alcohol. And Andrew walks in and they have like the most heated discussion they've ever had. They're talking about the lawyer. There's going to be a hearing. And he's like, so you're going to pretend to be sober for the judge? She's like, I'm not going to pretend. I'm going to go to AA. I'm going in the worst part of town, so I won't see anybody. So, of course, I will. And Andrew's not happy about this. And she's like, what is that even going to prove? And she says, perception is reality. So if people perceive me to have a drinking problem, then I do. And I don't want some idiotic judge using my hobby as an excuse to make you rich. So I'm going to give up wine and now I'm a recovering alcoholic. And he's like, I bet you still come to court hammered. And she's like, you don't think I love you enough to give up alcohol? And I was like, dang, that's kind of a nice of a mother to say.
Yeah, no, I actually, like, everything she said made a lot of sense to me. I was like, yeah. I mean,
yeah,
the perception lucky. Part too. I was like, she's I know, very that really tactful. Hit me.
Yeah. Yeah, I was like, dang, perception is reality. I fucking need to write that down.
I know.
So she says, I'm not done with you yet. You're not the man that I know you can be, which I also thought was an endearing statement. Mm-hmm. And Andrew is pissed about this. I have news for you. This is as good as I'm going to get. And she's like, if I believe that, I would fucking do a murder-suicide right now. I did like that, too. She killed it. This was a great conversation.
She was pulling all the mom moves. I was really impressed.
And she says, I mean, Andrew's like, we're unhappy. And this is just totally like a teen thing. He's like, mm-hmm. like, just give me my money. I'll get out of here forever. We're unhappy. And she's like, no. And he says, you're a stone cold bitch. You know that. And she throws the fucking bottle and breaks it against the refrigerator. And I'm obsessed with this. It breaks everywhere. And she's like, I didn't quite catch that. And he's like, I hate you. And she says, the opposite isn't of love isn't hate. It's indifference. And if you hate me, that means you still care and we're connected and I have a chance to set you right.
I was like, fuck, she fucking came in hot.
Mic drop.
Yeah,
served it. And Finn on Bree's.
She flipped the script on
not
him.
Not Finn on Bree's storyline because we touch on it at the end. Like she, okay, I'll just tell you. She goes to AA and Mary Alice Young is like monologuing over this whole thing. She goes, I'm Bree and I'm an alcoholic. And she says, you know, Bree still had her routine and she still rewarded herself at the end. She comes home from AA and pours herself a secret glass of wine. So
close,
Bree. That
so
is close. What is problematic. I'm like, oh my God, she loves Andrew so much, but like, this is out of control. Like, you can't even seriously stop drinking.
Yeah, this is how, like, you know that it, for real, like, we've suspected she had a drinking problem. Everyone's accused her, but this is the first time we're really... Like, I mean, obviously with her losing the kids, that wasn't good. But this is, like, the moment we see her, she truly cannot stop.
Like, yeah. So that's really problematic. But I'm rooting for Bree for once. Like, not Andrew. Although I do love Andrew. He's so fucking psycho, but...
He's very smart and psycho. I don't know. He sees opportunities, like, really well.
Learns from his mother. She's pretty strategic, too. So
that's true.
Ugh. But if you want to talk about how horrible Gabby and Carlos are,
step up
to the plate.
Okay, so Gabby and Carlos, as we know from last week's episode, have decided that it is time to adopt, which kudos to them. Adopting is awesome. Only took some trauma digging to get there, but they did it. And so after we have Gabby's interaction with the ladies, which was kind of the first part of the episode and when they're all together, the next time we see her, she is talking to Carlos and they are looking at all the photos they have just to send to the adoption agency or whatever, and it's just
well,
all
I think
photos
they
of
like
them.
Meet with the adoption agency and the lady's like, you have to make this scrapbook, it's like a profile to show people to get
yeah.
a kid.
Yeah,
and Gabby is like calling people slutty. She's like, what? So I have to prove I can adopt a kid from a skank who got knocked up at the back of a fucking 7-Eleven.
Yeah.
And Carlos is like, oh my God, please shut up.
He's like, please don't slut shame the future parents
mother
of
our baby. So, yeah.
Yeah, so they're going through all these photos, and they're all photos of them like getting drunk or being naked and being crazy and having fun, which is awesome. But Gabby is like, I don't really see what's wrong with it. But Carlos is like, obviously, like, we can't turn these in. Like, this is not going to be what they're looking for. So they decide that they have to, you know, make up that they're kid friendly. And, you know, it's funny because it's like I root for them. But at the same time, I'm like, as I'm watching this episode, I'm like, are they fit to be like parents? It's
like, after really... we like dive deeper.
Yeah, because even that alone, that they like never interact with their friends' children or anything, I'm like, okay. So then like they decide that they are gonna, they like go show up at Lynette's house basically and ask if they can use her kids to make like a scrapbook. And
be the godparents too.
Yeah, and they're like, can we be the godparents to your kids? And Lynette is like, surprisingly, is like, yeah. So they
I know, like, Lynette was a good friend.
I know. So they do this, like, fake photo shoot, and it's, like, Gabby playing guitar with the kids, and them doing all these, like, goofy things and having fun, and that's what they take with them to show the lady. And I did like the comment where Gabby was like, as long as she doesn't actually ask me to play guitar, like, we're good. Like, this is perfect.
Looks hilarious, too. I want to find that picture.
It was pretty awesome. It was, like, a great stock photo shoot. So, anyway, they're talking to the lady, Rhoda, I believe is her name, and I also thought it was funny that Gabby, just like you, cannot remember Lynette's children's names.
I noted that. I was like, she can't remember them either. She can't remember them
either. She's like, they all start with P's. Yeah. And so, as they walk in to talk to Rhoda, we get a nice little visit from John Roland's mom, who is stepping out of a different meeting. Yeah. Helen steps out and sees them go into the office, and she's like, what's going on here to the secretary? And she obviously tells her off screen, but Helen pops into their little meeting, and it's very, like, honest. She's like, hello, Gabrielle, and you can just see Gabby's face just, like, completely drop before she even hears him. But Helen's like, Carlos, Gabby, how are you guys? Not really, but she's like, I didn't know you guys were adopting, and they kind of just stare at her like, oh, fuck. And she's like, well, Rhoda's like, how do you know them? And she's like, they hired my son to be their gardener, and she raped him. Like,
I know, she just, like, fucking says it. It's so crazy.
And then Gabby's like, statutory, and I'm like, fuck, stop talking. Carlos is like, oh my god. And you can almost see Carlos's face, like, Gabby, Gabby, Gabby. But then Helen pulls the and Carlos was just in jail for slave labor. And it's like, Carlos, you also don't exactly have a squeaky clean history here, but whatever.
Oh, my lord.
And this lady, Rhoda, is, like, shocked. She's like, what the fuck? Also, Carlos's arrest record would definitely come up when they were applying to adopt. So I don't know why Rhoda's surprised by that. But basically, Helen's like, I'm taking over this case. And it's at that moment that Gabby and Carlos realize that they are not going to be able to adopt a baby because Helen blacklists them, essentially, to all the adoption agencies. Or she threatens to, at least. And then Gabby and Carlos have this conversation, and Carlos gets, you know, pretty upset, and Gabby, like, makes a point that they're getting this baby, and Carlos is like, wow, like, this is the first time that I felt like you truly wanted this kid. And Gabby's like, of course I do, like, especially now that people are telling me I can't have one.
Yeah.
And so they go to this, like, lawyer who essentially says he's, like, a baby broker, basically. And Gabby, because Gabby makes a comment before they see him, like, it'll just cost us. And sure enough, they basically decide that they're going to purchase a baby from a pregnant woman.
For $20,000. Yeah, he's like, I'm going to need proof that you're prepared to face the challenges ahead. And she's like, is $20,000 enough proof for you?
Mm-hmm.
And gives them a check. And that's that.
And again, where is their money coming from? Like, I'm wondering that
for episodes, because I'm like, Carlos doesn't fucking work anymore.
And, like, they clearly have money, but, like, they're going to run out with the way they spend it.
Yeah.
Maybe. I don't know. I don't know how being rich works, so I guess not. But
I don't know.
So that was kind of their storyline, and I'm conflicted on it because obviously, like, we love their character growth. We love it. But everything that is brought up against them, I'm like,
I'm like, I forgot, like, that happened. Do you remember how awkward she was with that girl last season that she bought the fucking bike for?
Mm-hmm.
She, like, hated that girl, so.
No, we've seen her interact very poorly with children. And, like, some kind of, like.
And she made out with somebody's husband.
Not good, just not
character
good.
Character default. Character defect, I should say. Yes. Well, Lynette and Tom are also warming our hearts a little bit. I know that Gabby and Carlos didn't, but Lynette and Tom do eventually, at the very end of their storyline, warm our hearts. But it's not after they have a big problem around who wears the pants, it seems. So Tom is pitching at work, and Lynette hates it a lot. And Tom is just trying to, like, salvage this pitch, and she's like, you could do better, thanks for presenting though. And after the meeting, Tom's like, what the fuck was that about? And she's like, I might have been bitchy, but you did a half-assed job. And he's like, what the fuck? And she's like, last night you were watching the game when you should have been making this pitch work. And he's like, you're saying I don't put, like, 100% in? And she's like, no, you didn't. So go make some more ideas and we can talk. And Tom's like, you're the boss. And she's like, yeah, I am. So this
which
sets
he knew going into this.
Yeah, this sets up, like, this is the, it's very one note, their story. It's like Tom being like, I don't like that you're the boss. And she's like, I don't know what to do. Like, I'm the boss at home, mm-hmm. at work. Sorry about it. You can change it. Like, that's what happens. There's just a couple different things. And at the end, they resolve it, I guess.
By so fucking in the elevator.
With healthy conversation. Yeah, and a fuck in the elevator. So, mm-hmm. But next time we see them, they're at a family dinner, and Tom is just, like, pouting so hard. Tom's like, the meatloaf is burnt.
He's so childish here. I was like, come on, man.
And she was like, you know, I was talking to Susan on the phone a little long and, like, left it in. Sorry. Mm-hmm. And she's like, is it that bad? And I'd be the same way. I'm like, oh my God, is dinner bad? And he's like, no, it's not at all. But you'd say it wasn't your best ever. You didn't put in your best effort.
Oh,
and
my God.
It's so rude of him. Yeah, I mean, she's like, no one gives, like, I mean, I don't know. Yeah, like, no one gives 100% all the time. Mm-hmm. Or he says that. You give the effort you can when they can. He's obviously talking about work. And she's like, you know what? You better make this point before I fucking hurl this plate at your face. She's picking up exactly what he's putting down. And she says, that was business. This is dinner. And she's like, so you're saying the client deserves more than your family? And I'm like, Tom is being such a brat. And
he is being like, oh my God, I wish there was a bigger word than brat, because it's like, holy shit, he's being so childish, but
he's being a princess. But she's like, I apologize for upsetting you. And like, can we move on? And then, she asked the boys how the meatloaf is, and they do say it's salty. So agreed that she is not very good at making fucking meatloaf, I guess.
I agree with Lynette though. Like Tom, like, she is his boss, so the expectation is that he has to give 100% at work. And it's like that he can't then come home and, like, compare the two, because if it was any other boss, it wouldn't matter.
Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah.
So he can't. I don't think he should be comparing them, but he obviously is very, his ego is really hurt. So then they're getting ready for bed, and Tom is like, what a rough day. And she's like, maybe there's a way to turn it around. And basically they start making out, like they're gonna mm-hmm. hook up, but then he pushes her off and he's like, what are you doing? Why are you doing that? And I'm like, what is going on? And he's like, stop trying to get on top. And she's like, I was just lost in the moment. I wasn't, like, trying to be on top. I don't want to argue unless it turns you on. And then they start, like, hooking up again. And he's like, you're trying to do it again. Like, you're bracing against the mattress. Like, don't say you're doing it. Weren't doing it and stuff like that. And she's like, what the fuck? Is this about me being your boss again? And she's like, you have to get over it. He's like, that's exactly my point. You're not just the boss in the office. You're the boss everywhere. And I'm just along for the ride. I'm a catty husband. And I'm like, oh, my God. So I didn't know that he was hurting this bad over it, but apparently he's been repressing these. And she says, I'm sorry you feel that way, but you cannot put that on me. This is your life. Like, step up, grab the steering mm-hmm. wheel, like, do what you want. Like, what am I supposed to say? And Tom, they don't fuck that night, which I feel sad for both of them.
Mm-hmm.
And then we get the resolution. Lynette and Tom are in the elevator looking miserable. There's a pitch in 15 minutes, and they're just on their way up. And after they get to the floor, he, like, makes the elevator doors close and, like, locks it, like, by mm-hmm. doing the emergency. And he says, I've been giving you a lot of grief for being my boss, but it's just hard for a guy to feel like he's not in charge of any part of his life. And she's like, it goes back and forth, so I don't know why you're fucking complaining. Mm-hmm. And he's like, it feels a little one-sided lately, and sometimes it needs to feel like I drive the train. I know it's my issue, and I'm going to step up and deal with it. And then they kiss, and they fuck in the elevator. So Lynette is not into it at first, and then he, like, convinces her. But
yeah.
I thought it was good that they had solid communication. I think it's annoying that Tom does this repeatedly, because I don't feel like this is the first time that he's pouted a little bit and then been like, I changed my whole mind. But
he is very, like, he does have an ego problem. I think he has like issues with his masculinity, and just like, not even based on this episode. Like, we've talked about it. We've had other instances of it where I actually did agree with him more than I do now, but it's like, he does make these decisions. Like, Lynette warned him about them working together. Like, she did not want this for this reason. And he didn't care. And he got his way, and he threw a fit about it, showed up to the job, applied, whatever, interviewed. And it's like, okay, now the thing's happening that she warned you about, and you don't like it, and now you're going to pout at home? Like, it just felt very, like, kind of pathetic a little bit. Like, I was like, Tom, like, I don't know what you expected here. And it's just like I said, if any other boss had told him that stuff, he wouldn't be acting this way.
Yeah.
And that's because he's not comfortable working for his wife. And then he's like, at home, you're the boss too. And it's like, she's right though. Like, he never, like, he could have made the fucking meatloaf.
Yeah.
He's like,
you took on this task. I don't know what he was complaining about, really. Like,
yeah.
He just wants to have a problem. He's so upset at her for the work thing. So I'm glad that he spoke out about it and they talked about it and he, like, didn't let it exist further than that. But,
mm-hmm.
yeah, that's their storyline. It is endearing. I like seeing them solve a problem. Feel like maybe it's obviously repetitive that he has a problem, so I'm sure it'll come to a head eventually. Yeah, so I'll let you take away Susan's surgery, which is maybe one of my favorite storylines of the episode, okay. which I rarely say about Susan.
Very surprised by this turn of events. But, yes, so the surgery that we have spent how many episodes now building towards?
like 4 to 5 at the very least.
yeah, so it's finally happening. I guess this is her arc for the season. So after we see her in her shitty cowgirl shirt, she goes to the hospital for her surgery, and she has flowers delivered to her. And they're from Dr. Ron, who is clearly super into her and wants to move this relationship along, which I'm kind of surprised by, I guess, because I do feel like we haven't really spent a lot of time with them as a couple.
But I don't even know, like, what their relationship is about. Like,
yeah, it's super weird. But while that's happening, the doctor who's going to do her surgery broke his arm or some shit. I don't fucking know. But he's still going to, like, direct the surgery. And
so she doesn't even get what she wants in the end. Like, she got married so her insurance would cover another doctor or something like that. I don't know.
I don't even know. But, like, now we spent a whole episode about Dr. Ron not doing her surgery, so I was like, I don't even get the point of this anyway.
It's so stupid.
This turn of events doesn't even, like, really affect the story whatsoever, so I was kind of like, why did this even happen?
I think they just want to put him in the surgery room, and they were like, how do we get him in there?
Yeah, so while this is happening, the lady that brings in the flowers is Nurse Heisel, which, is she the same nurse from season one?
She's the same nurse from the beginning of the episode when Juanita Solis died.
Yeah.
I was thinking that. I think so.
I think it is, yeah, because that spiky red haircut is, yeah, you don't forget
that.
You don't
miss it.
That Karen cut.
That's why she fucking got it.
yeah. So basically he's like, I've been thinking about us a lot lately, and I wrote down all my feelings in this fucking card, which, like, just say it. Like, why even, what? Like, I don't know. It was just weird. So he's like, I can't be in here while you read it. Which, again, I'm like, how old is this man? Like, why can't he just tell her how he feels? Like, I found that very strange. But so he, like, dips out of the room, and this nurse is, like, staring at him with, like, puppy dog eyes and the whole situation, like, so lovingly. And Susan reads the card, and she's like, oh, wow, there's a lot here. And the nurse is like, can I read it? I helped pick it out.
So weird.
Like, what's happening?
Not okay. So then,
yeah, Susan's like, it's private. And the nurse is just, like, not getting that. So Susan lets her read it. And it's a little weird, but she's, like, laughing and losing her mind at this card. And she's like, yeah, I don't know. It was just super bizarre. I'm like, is she into him? Like, is that what the implication is?
Yeah, because at the end, when we get to the end, and you, like, when she's like, why are you always falling in love with skanks? I love you. It's that she's just in love with him. Yeah.
Yeah, but it's just, like, the way they set it up, I was like, she's so obsessed, though, with, like, their, I don't know, it was so weird.
It was strange, yeah.
Yeah. So, later on, is it before or after her surgery that Carl shows up?
It's before.
Okay. I was a little confused because she was, like, knocked out, and I was like, why?
She's been in the hospital for days at this point. I don't know why.
I know. It feels like she's been there for a really long time. So Carl's there, and he's, like, roasting this note, like, reading it to Susan.
He should. It sounded stupid.
Yeah, and Susan's like, what the fuck? Like, why are you reading that? And he
calls him Dr. Love. Should I call him Dr. Love?
Oh, my God, it's brutal. So he's like, oh, so you really like him? And she's like, yeah, of course. And she, like, lists very basic generic traits about him.
Funny, kind. Yeah.
Yeah, and he's like, I don't hear the word love in there. I'm like, Carl, like, I just wish Carl would butt the fuck out of Susan's, like,
also, there's a lot of pressure on Susan to, like, say that she loves him. And, like, they've been dating for, like, 3 months, maybe. I wouldn't even say 3 months. We don't even know how much time has passed. They haven't been dating that long. I feel like it's just aggressive.
And I feel like Carl is, like, putting pressure on her, like, to not say it almost. He's by, like, making her decide how she feels. Like, it was just weird. And so, like, he basically is like, oh, next 5 years of your life, trying to find a feeling that doesn't exist. And she's like, why the fuck are we talking about this?
Like, she's like, I didn't ask you. I wasted on you.
Yeah. And he's like, well, we're married. I have certain rights. And one of them is to give you a hard time. Not really. He says, like, badger her or whatever.
Yeah.
But he starts, like, making jokes and she kicks him out. And as he's leaving, he, like, says to the nurse, like, watch out for my wife. She's on a tear.
Mm-hmm.
And the nurse is like, what the fuck? And I'm like, Carl, why are you even talking? So then the next time we see them, the nurse comes in to, again, before surgery, I guess. Like, so much, she's in the hospital for so long before her surgery. Like, yeah. It was just very weird. But she's, like, taking her blood pressure and puts it on really tight. And Susan's like, what the fuck? Like, that hurts. And the nurse is like, oh, that surprises me. I just thought you were dead inside. And I'm like, whoa.
I'm like, damn.
And so Susan's like, what's happening? And the nurse is like, I know that you're married. And Susan's like, I'm not. And this lady's like, well, that man that came to see you yesterday, he said that you're his wife. Okay, so she has been in there for multiple days also at this point. I'm so confused.
I don't know.
Even with good insurance, they don't just let you stay at the hospital for days.
Yeah.
So she's like, I checked your insurance forms and you're still married. Like, I know this for a fact. And, like, you're a lying, adulterous skank. And Susan's like, no,
skank over and over. Yeah.
I'm like, that's what's dating this show more than anything is the vocabulary.
Yeah.
So Susan zoinks out of there, unplugs herself from everything in the most Susan way possible, and stops the nurse and tells her, basically admits to, like, insurance fraud. And she's like, I just didn't want to tell Dr. Ron because I don't want him to be an accomplice in this, like, insurance fraud scam, which I'm like, that actually is a good reason. Makes sense. And the nurse is like, oh, so you're protecting him? And she's like, yeah, I am. And then the nurse immediately is like, oh, okay, cool. Well, I'm just glad you're not two-timing him. Everything's all good.
I know. I'm like, okay, whatever.
Yeah. This nurse is all over the place. And then the nurse, like, tells her, he's working up the courage to tell you I love you. And I'm like, why does this nurse know all this? And why the fuck would she tell Susan that? Like, it's just... And the nurse is like, you have to act surprised about it. And Susan's like, what the fuck is happening? Okay, yeah, like, I'm super surprised. So fast forward, later we see Susan and she's in the hospital and Mike comes to visit her. And this is where I'm like, what? Mike is so hot and cold with her. Like, I was really surprised that he showed up at the hospital.
Yeah, me too. He brought her flowers, and she's, like, all loopy, and she's, like, jazzed about it.
And it's, like, the first time, like, the last time we saw them interact, she was telling him that she was getting married, and it was, like, he really didn't seem to care. So it was, like, okay. And then, so, like, yeah, he's talking to Carl, and Carl tells him about, like, the doctor's note to her, and he's, like, he kept using words like soulmate and eternity, and I almost puked. And Mike's like, well, what did Susan think about that? And Carl's like, well, she seemed to be really into it. And which is kind of... Carl's just an instigator. He's just literally here to stir the fucking pot. But yeah, so Susan sees Mike and Mike goes over to see her before she goes into surgery. And she's all looped out. But she's like, what are you doing here? And he's like, oh, I just wanted to wish you luck. Like, before the surgery that you apparently been in the hospital for a week waiting to have. And she's like, oh, that's so sweet. Like, I'm happy to see you. And she's like, it means so much to me that you came. And he's like, well, take care. And so then he, like, gets out of there. And Carl's, like, smirking at the situation yet again. Because I seriously do think that Carl's whole motivation is just to fuck with Susan at this point. Like,
yeah.
I don't know why, like,
he's just a piece of shit. He's gonna go marry Edie in, like, 2 weeks. But
I know. I'm like, get over yourself, dude. So they ask her how she's doing as she's, like, going under anesthesia or whatever. And... Dr. Ron's talking to her and he's like, that corny stuff about me holding your heart in my hands. Well, what I wanted to say was, that my feelings for you keep growing and that I hope you feel the same way about me, basically. And he tells her that he loves her. And this is, like, peak Susan right here. But she is like, thank you. I love Mike.
I know. I'm just like, I was like loving for it. I loved it.
And he's like, who's Mike? And then fucking Nurse Heisel's like, well, I don't know that about that, but she's married to a guy named Carl. And I'm like, oh no.
And she's like, why are you always falling in love with skanks?
And she's like, nurse is like, I'm so sorry, I should have told you. Susan's literally going under like, Mike, just like saying
and
it.
Dr. Ron is like, okay, let's cut this bitch open.
Yeah. Just like horrible. Oh, just everything about this is a fucking mess. So yeah, and that's how Susan goes into surgery.
It was so cringe, but
I was like, finally they did something interesting with this storyline. Yeah, because we've had to sit through this for weeks.
If this is what it was all for, it still wasn't worth it, but it's funny. It did make me laugh a lot. It was funny.
No, it was funny. And I did like for once Susan's shenanigans were entertaining. I think Carl truly though, like, I don't know what Carl's even really doing in this storyline because he has no real reason to be around all the time other than to stir the pot, but whatever.
Dang. No. Yeah. So Susan and Mike, the continuation, we shall see.
Mm-hmm.
But last but not least, we do have more going on with Mike after Paul gets arrested. He's still checking up on Zach. So we'll cover that, and that will be the end of the episode.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot did happen for Mike. So he sees Zach freaking out on his porch about where his dad is, and he also sees that Felicia moved back in next door. And they have a chat about, like, why she moved back in. And he's like, she says the police came to take Paul away last night. And he's like, the police? And she's like, from the way they handled him, they won't be back anytime soon. And Zach is just like, where's my dad? And then Mike calls Noah and is like, what the fuck is going on? And Noah's like, it's none of your business. And he said, Mike's like, if anything happened to Paul Young. And Noah says, it already happened. And Mike's like, is he dead? And Noah's not giving him any answers here.
Nope.
And he says, you may have just killed the most important person in your grandson's life. So do you think he's going to want to have anything to do with you now? And Noah's like, well, he will find out. Or wait, I don't know. Mike says he'll find out about this. Don't worry. I'm going to go tell Zach. And he goes and grabs his Glock out of his cupboard. And then Mike is now with Zach, and he's laying the story down. He says he has contacts at the police. He made some calls, but he can't get an answer. And Zach is still stupid, and he's like, how do they just lose somebody? And Mike is like, they didn't lose him, and it's not an accident, son. So the doorbell rings, and Mike reaches for that Glock, but it's Felicia with some macaroons, and she's like, Zach, you look like shit. And then she sees Mike behind him, and she's like, oh my god, what a little picture. And Felicia says that she's there to like offer a peace offering for Zach. Basically, they didn't part on good terms, but you know, I'm still reminded of him, and forgive and forget is my motto. So here's some macaroons. And then a police car rolls up. And at first you think they're going to deliver the news that Paul is dead, but then Paul steps out of the back of the police car, and Paul is back, baby. And he's looking hella rugged. And we get a flashback. about how Paul beat the shit out of these men with a knife and made his way out of the back of that little van.
And so we need to know more about Paul though, because like, so he's what, some ninja? Like, was he in the Marines? Like, what's happening here?
He must have been trained.
Because how is he able to do this?
Practicing jujitsu twice a week or something.
I need to know more. Like, he's an undercover investor. Like, what's happening?
Yeah, I don't know, but it was intense, and it was in a black and white flashback, if I recall correctly. But
it was pretty badass, not gonna lie.
Paul eats a macaroon. He's like, how'd you know I like these? And Felicia is like shocked.
Yeah.
So next thing we know, Mike and Paul are talking about Noah Taylor, that he doesn't give up. They're still strategizing. And Paul's like, we'll be gone by the morning. And Mike's like, it's too late for that. He has people watching you, this and that, yada, yada. And Paul's just like, what do you want me to do then? Like, I can't win. I can't run. I can't stay. What am I supposed to do? And
he's like, why don't you start coming up with solutions? Like, what the fuck?
And so Mike's like, we have to use some of the leverage we have. And he's speaking about Zach. And he says, let him meet Zach. He'll be dead in a few months. Like, let's just get on with this. And Paul is like, he's not going to meet Zach. And Zach is listening like he's always been because he has nothing else to do since he's basically a prisoner. And Zach's like, I'll do it. I'm ready to be leverage. And if it means he'll leave us alone. And then Mike and Zach go meet Noah Taylor. And Zach has some style. He's wearing, like, a bomber-type jacket. And I was like, wow, Zach, looking sharp there for the first time maybe ever. But he's also playing this role that I've never seen him. Because he's been, like, the vulnerable, like, fucked-up school shooter teen. And now he's trying to be a badass. He's like, I'm not going to hug you. It's not like you're my grandfather. And, like, giving such attitude. And Noah's like, Mike, you can wait outside. And he's like, no, I'm going to sit here. But then Zach goes on a whole tangent about how Paul is his real dad. And if anything happens to me or happens to him, you'll never see me again. And Noah's like, are you blackmailing me? I couldn't be prouder of you. And it's this weird moment. I really didn't enjoy it, but I did enjoy Zach's style. But he's talking about Noah then has a sassy comeback. He's like, which dad are you talking about? Because Zach said, if you ever touch my dad. And he's like, you know which one, the one who raised me. And Mike looks hurt and is like, oh my God, this is awkward.
Like, I was almost like, why are you so hurt though? Like I don't know. Like, he literally just found out about you. Like, chill.
And then they get those, like, boundaries established that Paul won't be killed. And then they have some small talk. And then Mike goes to the hospital. So Mary Alice Young wraps up our episode after that. She says, this is how Brie Vandekamp finally came to change her weekly routine. She still cleaned on Tuesdays, paid bills on Wednesdays, and did laundry on Thursdays. But her Fridays were now reserved for a meeting, a special meeting where she stood in front of people and said things she didn't believe. And afterwards, she would come home and reward herself on the completion of another successful week with a little glass of wine. So, wow, you guys.
This episode had a lot. Like, there was a lot going on.
So much happened.
But,
you know, that we, before we get into what we are thinking about it, we have to do a fuck, marry, kill. So, unfortunately, I have to kill Andrew.
Okay.
I was thinking killing Justin for participating in Andrew's scheme, but I really have to kill Andrew because he is out of control.
Yeah. No, he is.
And if
this is like next level for him.
If I can, I have to do a murder-suicide. I have to do the murder-suicide that Brie suggested because they are toxic people.
Yeah.
Both of them.
I agree.
So.
Oh, yeah.
But we'll just stick with, we'll stick with Andrew for now. I'm going to have to marry Mike because he didn't even have to show up at the hospital with flowers, but he fucking did.
Okay.
And I appreciate that because he truly still cares and is showing it, even though he's, like, not very, like, he doesn't need to be. I don't know. I just appreciated that he showed up at the hospital.
He just can't get that girl out of his head.
Yeah, I just liked it. I have to marry Mike. So sweet of him. I'm going to have to fuck Tom in the elevator because I like that. He just went after it. That was sexy to me. So those are my choices this week. Well, I guess threesome Tom and Lynette in the elevator. I liked it.
Nice.
I liked the activity. So that's where I land.
For me, I'm like looking back over the story, trying to figure out what I want to do here. But I would kill Carl because I think that he's just fucking shit up for everybody for no reason, like stirring the pot, being kind of a bitch.
Yeah.
I kind of respect Andrew's sociopathy a little too much to kill him this time.
Dang.
Just because this took a turn on, like, he committed harder than he did in the past, you know?
Yeah.
And I in a way respect his villainy. Okay. Whereas with Carl, I'm like, you don't even have any motivation. Like,
you're always just a psycho. Hate Carl. Yeah.
I do. I really can't stand him. Mary, I'm gonna have to come back to that one. Fuck it. It's gonna have to be Paul this week.
What?
I'm sorry, but yes, like, his badassery, like, beating up those cons, like, what the hell? And he makes big money. He makes money. We know this, like, as an investor.
Okay.
And he's got skills. I'm just, like, really impressed with his, like, so far all. Dang. I don't know. I get it, Mary Alice. I get it.
But, you took me by surprise there.
Yeah, I came in like hot here with this one. But Mary, oh man, I might steal your Mary just because no one else. Like, I would almost put Paul as both, but that's, we don't really
up. Do it that way. You can. I can. Up. I think you can fucking Mary.
Okay, because basically Paul would take care of you. Just saying, I'm like very impressed with him. I don't know, like, he's the most. Like, he, so far from what we've learned about Paul, is he was dedicated to Mary Alice. He, like, helped her cover up a murder. Yeah. He also made really good money for them to live the way they lived. And now we find out that he, like, is a fucking badass jiu-jitsu master or some shit. So I'm like, honestly, I'm like, yeah, I would like that on my team. For sure.
Okay, all right. Paul, what a sleeper. I didn't know you were so turned on by Paul.
I didn't know I was either until right now, I guess.
Okay. Well, Housewife of the Week. This is a tough one as well because everybody kind of blew.
I know. We were just reminded that Gabby's a rapist, Bree's an alcoholic, Susan, like, can't control her heart, has no emotional...
Does Lynette get it by default? Because she was rather understanding of Tom when they were faced with an issue.
I think she was understanding without being a pushover, and I liked that. Mm-hmm. Like, I think she handled it without, like, she handled it well without, like, giving up her own... feelings. Like, I feel like she didn't have to sacrifice too hard, but found a way to, like, make Tom feel like a man again, yet again. Like, that seems to be her other full-time job, is making sure Tom feels like a man.
That's your full-time job in a relationship sometimes. I guess. At least a part-time job.
Like, yeah.
Making your boyfriend feel good.
So I have to give it to Lynette, I guess, by default.
Yeah. Nobody was spectacular, like, but Lynette did a kind gesture of taking care of her husband, being open, listening, and responsive. So,
yeah,
Lynette, you got it this week. And after that, we have our rating, and I think I'm locked in. You locked in?
Yeah, I'm locked
in. Okay, 3, 2, 1, 4.25. 4.25. Okay, we're lined. Okay. Awesome. I had to do it. No apple whites. We're still, like, missing that aspect. But I liked Paul, Zach, and Mike. I mean, we rarely get that much of them. And we got a lot this episode. So I liked that we got a lot of movement. We saw a rugged Paul. We learned more about him as a character and as a person. I didn't necessarily, I did have to dock a little, although Lynette got Housewife of the Week and I like that she was understanding with Tom, their whole storyline was just Tom feeling emasculated. So I didn't necessarily, it was like him pouting and him being upset that she's a boss bitch. And like, I think that was a bit annoying sometimes. Like, it overall wasn't as thrilling. And obviously it got in the fours for me because for the first time in a long time, I've liked Susan in her storyline. So, and Gabby and Carlos, like, no complaints. I really enjoyed their storyline as well. And poor Bree, although she's an alcoholic, it is entertaining. So it's keeping me on the edge of my seat.
Yeah. I think the show does a good job of balancing, like, making our characters fully fleshed and that they're not always these perfect women. Like, they make mistakes. And I think this episode did a good job of, like, kind of handling that, because it's like, it is easy to forget that Gabby was raping a child, and it is easy to forget that, like, while Bree, like, while Andrew is terrible, Bree does have a drinking problem, you know?
Yeah.
And I think that this episode did a really good job balancing, like, it made us question these characters a little bit, but we still are rooting for them, and I think it struck that tone really well.
Yeah.
And for once, like, Susan was likable. I felt like her manic energy wasn't nearly, like, was not Chihuahua level today. Like, I do think that, because you're right, like, Susan's been kind of the weak link most of this season.
I've been like, I hate her storyline. I hate it. Every episode, I'm like, what the fuck? It's gonna be her, like, the just first being half, stupid.
Yeah, like the first half of the season was just her flip flopping about Zach to a point that she self sabotaged her whole life, and then now, like, it's just this really just boring.
Dating a guy she clearly doesn't care about, and he's boring. Like,
it's, well, and they don't, the show seems like they don't even care about him because
they don't.
We've had no time with their relationship. Like, the past two episodes have, he's barely been in it, yet now all of a sudden it's I love you, and it's like, while there's the point of the episode was that Susan feels similar to the way we're kind of feeling about it, she is, has actually been in this relationship, but we just haven't seen it. So it's like, I was kind of bored by that part of it, but I liked her interactions with, like, Carl and Mike, because I felt like it gave more depth to, like, an episode that could have been really boring for her.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's almost like, I don't know when they write and film the episodes compared to when it actually comes out, because I have to wonder if, like, Dr. Ron just got, like, really bad reception when his episodes were happening, and they kind of, like...
Probably. They were probably received this way. We're like, who is Dr. Ron? He's certainly not fucking Mike. That's it.
And that's why they have to keep saying Dr. Ron, because he's so forgettable.
Because we're like, who is he? Yeah.
Yeah. So, I don't know. Like, I did like Susan's storyline. It was a big up from the last few episodes. And then Carlos and Gabby, I really enjoyed their story. Like, I was invested. Like, it is very, it makes you question how you feel about them as characters, which I really liked.
Yeah.
And, yeah, Lynette and Tom's, I kind of do, I am waiting for an episode where maybe it's not all about Tom feeling emasculated by something. Because I do feel like we've had a handful of episodes this season that have literally just been, something makes him feel emasculated. Whether or not it actually should. But yeah. I'm just kind of like, I'm a little bored of that dynamic. Like, I get it. Tom has issues with that. Lynette has control issues. Now what? Like, okay. But yeah. But I did enjoy the episode. Like, and yeah, I'll knock it just because of the Applewhites. Like, that storyline just seriously seems like a completely different show almost.
Yeah.
And I'm not super invested in the Noah Zach situation, aside from how Paul got to have his, like, superhero moment. But overall, it was an improvement. I like it, but I just don't, like... It almost feels like the Applewhites in that sense, where, like, we'll have Zach around, and then we kind of forget about him, and then they bring him back.
Yeah, I
and
wish it was a little bit more consistent this season.
Yeah.
Like, one mystery. I feel like there's just two. They tried to continue first season's thing, and then also add the Applewhites. And now I'm just like, I want just one that I can focus on.
Yeah. And so, I think that that's something that the writers learned this season, I would say, is, like, they had too many cooks in the kitchen. Like, too many storylines all going at once.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I get you. I feel it. Good review. Well, that is the way the cookie crumbles for us this week. Mm-hmm. As always, we'd love to hear what you're thinking. Love to hear any of your desperate deeds, any of your Apple ratings. If you're mm-hmm. feeling passionately about a storyline, if season two is your favorite season, let us know and why.
Yeah.
So we're always loving some feedback. You can rate and review us on Apple Podcasts. You can follow mm-hmm. us on Spotify or anywhere else that you're listening to this podcast. We would greatly appreciate that. Tell your friends, tell your family, retweet, repost us, do whatever. We love just having interactions with you guys. But we have an Instagram, mm-hmm. Twitter, website, email. You can reach us any way that you feel. And yeah, we're just happy that you're along for the ride.
For sure.
Other than that, you know the words that we leave you with every week. Take them to heart and know mm-hmm. your neighbors.
Know your neighbors.